My next guest has been with us many times in his capacity as Senior Director of News and Faith Initiatives at GLAAD, the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation. And while we've touched on his work with young LGBTQI people of faith, I'm happy to welcome Ross Murray in his role as author as he prepares for his book, Made, Known, Loved, Developing LGBTQ Inclusive Youth Ministry to Emerge on Tuesday. Ross, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. It's good to be back here with you.
And congratulations on this book. Let's start with the objectives. What was your goal in writing this book?
I'm a founding director of a youth ministry called The Naming Project, which is an LGBTQ-focused youth ministry. Our main program is a summer camp, and we found that we would constantly get questions from pastors and ministers and youth ministry people about how to best include LGBTQ youth into their programs. And so these questions kind of built up over time and realized the book is a good way to address the questions that were being asked, but also what are the values and assumptions that exist behind the questions as well? And so I take the questions that we have, and all the chapters are actually framed around questions, and then sort of come back with challenging answers to help people think about what kind of congregation do we want to be? What's our values? What's very important to us? Okay, that will inform these logistical decisions about how to do impactful and meaningful and faithful ministry that does welcome and include LGBTQ youth. So it's based on 18 years at the Naming Project and now getting to proactively put that out into the world.
Who is the book for? What audiences do you imagine reading this and benefiting from it the most? I think you've just already been talking about that, so go ahead more on it.
Yeah, the primary audience is youth ministry people. I am a youth ministry person. I know you've had me on this as a guest, yes, as an advocate, right, which I am, but my work is so much youth ministry focused. And so it's for my peers, for the people that do work in congregations or summer camps, church camps, or youth ministry programs, to kind of figure out what that welcome and inclusion is like. And beyond that, I think it's going to be helpful for clergy, for pastors. I even think for parents. It's not a parenting book, but definitely Christian parents that are part of a congregation that also want their child to be safe and protected and have the opportunity to hear the gospel in the same way that all the other kids in a youth group does. I think it's going to be helpful and instructive for them. I feel like over the last 10 to 20 years, you know, there's been this ongoing raging debate about LGBTQ people in church. And one reason why I started the Naming Project and why we wrote this was that we realized all those debates were very adult in nature. It was about marriage. It was about ordination. And we weren't yet talking about what does it mean for someone who is growing up and wondering, who am I? Who did God make me to be? How do I relate to the rest of the world? And how do I grow into a healthy, productive adult? And what's really interesting is that now, when the book is coming out, we're in a setting where a lot of the debates in the public sphere has been around youth. And we have these bills in state legislatures that are specifically targeting and isolating LGBTQ youth and cutting them off from resources. So I'm hoping this will be an infusion to help churches to be those helpful resources at a time that's being under attack.
Yeah. Made, known, loved. What's the significance of those words and why is that the title?
You know, I end up landing on that title. It was one of our camp themes one year. One of our camp themes was made known, and we put it made/known. And it was really probably one of my favorite themes that we work with. And it was an exploration of the fact that we are created by God and that God knows us intimately as the way that a creator does know their own creation. And because God knows us so intimately, God loves us deeply as we are. And I think part of our role as the church, and part of our role, especially for youth ministry people that are working with folks that are going through adolescence and those questions of who am I and how do I relate to God and how do I relate to the rest of the world, is really centered on making sure that they understand and know that they are made by God, that they are known by God, and that they are loved by God, which can then propel them out into the rest of the world to kind of live the rest of their lives full and free.
Would you be able to point to an experience or two and tell something about them that you've had as a youth ministry leader that informs the made known, loved structure and content of the book?
Sure. I have a lot of stories from our time running the Naming Project, and you get a lot of stuff from there. And I, one year, we developed a worship ritual, and we kind of made it up. Youth ministry people know you make up a lot of stuff on the spot. So we were planning worship, and we were going to, we'll do something that incorporates the beach because worship on beach is really nice. And then my co-leaders, Brad and Jay, I was not present when they did this, but they found a mirror that was kind of laying around in a shed and decided that as a part of the ritual for this particular worship service was that I'd lead the youth in a song, but while we're singing, people were invited to kind of different stations. And the two stations that we set up were, one, looking in a mirror and hearing words of affirmation from Pastor Jay. Mm-hmm. And they would go from that mirror over to Pastor Brad, who was standing kind of ankle deep in the lake and doing a remembrance of their baptism. And so scooping up some water from the lake and making the sign of the cross in their forehead and giving them that affirmation blessing. And what's always really interesting is when we do these affirming, you are God's beautiful creation, it's very hard for young people, and it's very hard for all of us to hear that and accept that. And we were a part of a television program, so I can kind of rewatch this on Our America with Lisa Ling. Youth have a very hard time making eye contact with themselves in the mirror. And you can hear gentle prodding of like, look at yourself. Don't look at me. Don't look away. Look at yourself in the mirror and hear these words of affirmation that you are a beautiful creation of God. And then moving on from there to have that affirmation be swept up in a ritual that looks and sounds like a sacrament, and helping them to remember that they are claimed by God. And I think that's true, is we kind of need that remembrance and that deep looking at ourselves and knowing the kind of beauty that we are.
I want you to talk more about the Naming Project, how that came into being and how it's grown to what it is.
Sure. The Naming Project is a program near and dear to my heart. So about that same time, about 20 years ago, when I was first getting started in doing some LGBTQ work, doing youth ministry, I joined the local chapter of what was then called Lutherans Concerned North America. They're now called Reconciling Works. And this was a movement to try to make the Lutheran Church more welcoming and inclusive. And I asked around a little bit, and people said at the time they had a policy against including anyone under 18 years of age. And that policy was from a fear of what accusations would come up with LGBTQ adults working and interacting with young people, which I understand the basis of the fear, and I do understand that as a real threat. But then as someone who was educated and trained in doing youth ministry work, sort of said, we can create spaces that are safe. And why don't we do that? And so advocating for them. At the same time, in my job, I was approached by a woman that asked, are there church-based programs for LGBTQ youth? And she told me the story of a young person who was growing up in suburban Minneapolis, who had come out to his parents. He was 15. They were accepting, but they were trying to find a good community for him to be a part of. And they were not finding one. They were finding a lot of really secular organizations. They were finding a lot of organizations that were dealing with a lot of trauma, kids that had been kicked out of their home. And this is not this child's experience, right? And this child was looking for community. And he found community on the internet. And one day the mom came home and there was a 40-year-old man on the front steps of their house because he had messaged and chatted with someone and someone came over. So this like heightened that like we need to find something. And so this woman asked my coworker asked me, we searched and found there at the time were no such programs like that. And so decided, well, maybe we should create the first one like that. And it began as a weekly meeting on Sunday afternoons in a basement in a Lutheran church in Minneapolis. The camp grew very quickly after that and kind of has become the main program that we've done. So since 2004, non-COVID years, we've been holding a week-long LGBTQ church camp for teenagers that if you've been to a church camp, you will recognize the structure. It looks like the camp I went to. It looks like the camp that I worked at. And the thing that makes it very LGBTQ is really the people and the intentionality on knowing that we are being a welcome and an inclusive space to help people explore their identity, their faith, their sexual orientation, their gender identity, you know, what they believe and how they're going to live that out in the real world.
Yeah. You mentioned the questions. I love how each chapter of the book is titled with a question. Could you choose one or two of these questions and just give us a taste of how you answer them?
Sure. I'm going to have to look because I don't yet have my book memorized. I probably will start getting that soon. So I think there's a couple things that I think are really helpful to really be thinking about. One is sort of how Jesus-y should our program be? Sometimes, you know, we set up programs and we recognize that we can either cater to folks that are very like inside our churches, inside our denominations, and they're already kind of in the flock. Mm-hmm. And if we do that, it is helpful and reaffirms their faith, but it also might limit that level of impact. And the Naming Project, since we're LGBTQ specific, we have youth that come to us from a variety of faith backgrounds and sometimes really like no real formal faith background, a vague sense of spirituality, an agnostic, you know. But what's interesting is that as we go through our camp program, we sort of say, you can be wherever you are on the journey. I'm not going to dictate to you what it is you have to believe. Just like I'm not going to dictate to you what kind of Christian to be, to the same way that I don't want to dictate to you what kind of LGBTQ person you need to be. But this program and the adult leaders and those of us that are running it, this is where we're coming from. These are the values that we have. This is what's important to us. And so these are the things we're going to do. We're going to sing the church songs. We're going to do worship. We're going to do prayers. And you're always invited to join us for that. And what I find is that youth are incredibly engaged and want to do that. They want to be a part of worship and the songs and the prayers and even Bible studies. And I think you get some of the best Bible study questions from youth that don't know anything about the Bible, right? Like, well, wait, why are there four different versions of the same story about Jesus? Yeah. Like, that's a great question that we don't often question or think about ourselves, but someone who's looking from the outside to ask, like, why do we have these four different perspectives on what's essentially the same story? Yeah. And then the corollary for that, I think, when we kind of get near the end, and this starts to bridge into my advocacy world as well, there's a couple questions in the last couple chapters that just say, what about working with other ministry programs that don't share my values about LGBTQ people? And what happens to LGBTQ youth outside my youth group? So that's a little bit looking beyond the congregation, yeah, looking beyond the people that are in our flock and recognizing that if we really want to make a world where young people are seen and heard and valued and know that they're a beloved child of God, our work is going to have to go beyond our church walls. And that's going to mean, sometimes it means challenging the church structures, challenging those that are built to be anti-LGBTQ, because sadly, a lot of youth ministry comes from anti-LGBTQ sources. They're really good at what they do, but the theology isn't there. And I help people to think through, what are the questions you need to ask to these other ministries to make sure that your LGBTQ youth are going to be safe? And beyond that, how do you show up to profess the gospel and proclaim justice for LGBTQ youth, for kids that are never going to enter our churches? And so that means showing up at city council meetings or state legislatures or rallies or protests or talking about any of these dozens of bills that are targeting transgender youth this year. And so making sure that they see that as a part of their youth ministry, which traditionally is not something we've done. So I'm starting to argue that, you know, you might think that going to a lobby day at your state capitol doesn't seem like youth ministry, really. I will argue that ski trips also aren't really youth ministry, but we do those all the time. And so this is something that you can absolutely build with a faithful lens and build it and speak out as Christians for the care and protection of the least of these, which is something that Christ calls us to do. And so I kind of give a little bit of a blueprint of, like, this is how you can do that.
Yeah. You know, And I don't have to tell you this, obviously. When we look at the religious landscape in America, an awful lot of faith leaders are ready to exclude LGBTQI plus persons, including youth. Thankfully, the number of leaders and congregations recognizing their responsibility to be welcoming is growing. And I just am guessing that that is a part of the audience that you had in mind when you were writing the book.
Yeah, I from the beginning, and this goes back to the starting of the Naming Project too, those questions that came in, there were a lot of people that wanted to be welcoming and inclusive and didn't quite know how or what to do. And I tell the story about this too, of a woman who I still work with and we're friends with. I was leading a panel, and this is before the Naming Project even started, about youth ministry for LGBTQ youth. And she said, I want to be, if a child came out to me, I want to be affirming, but I don't know what to tell them. And I'm scared I'm just going to be quiet in front of them. And me not saying anything means I sound like I'm not affirming, but I really am, but I don't know. You know, it's that, like, fear of doing or saying the wrong thing. And I think that's part of what we need to understand and accept, and then find ways to get over or fix that. And I think that's, it's been helped in so many circles, because there are increasing numbers of LGBTQ affirming congregations and people and faith leaders. But in our public, and you know this, in our public sphere, most of the loudest anti-LGBTQ voices regularly invoke religious language, regularly invoke faith. And I think we don't do that quite as much. And so I want to think about how we care for and keep our young people safe who are in our care and protection, and how we can make sure that they can be safe, because they aren't always in our care and protection. And that's the public advocacy. That is, when I think of, you know, the Great Commission and the go forth and baptize all the nations, that kind of language, from this perspective, that looks like public advocacy. That looks like showing up where people are and saying, I'm here representing the Christian church and the scriptures and the God who created us all. And a law that prevents you from getting to see your doctor does not honor you as a beautiful creation of God. And I'm here on behalf of XYZ Baptist Church, right? And to make sure that that is known and understood, one, to counter the message that's already predominantly out there, but also to start to proactively name and claim our faith in a really public way, and name that as a part of what our core beliefs really are.
What would you like every person who reads that book put it down and say?
I want them to say, I have LGBTQ youth in my youth ministry, even if I don't know who they are, and I will listen to them and believe them and treat them according to what they say to me, even if they tell me something different next week or next month or next year. Those are like my two most essential kind of takeaways from the book. And then everything else kind of goes beyond there.
Ross Murray is Senior Director of News and Faith Initiatives at GLAAD, where he amplifies the voices of LGBT affirming communities of faith and LGBT people of faith. Ross is also a founder and director of the Naming Project, a faith-based camp for LGBT youth and their allies. His new book comes out on Tuesday. The title is Made Known, Loved, Developing LGBTQ Inclusive Youth Ministry. Ross, thank you so much for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much. I love chatting with you every time.